not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time, let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony?
Well, greetings, everybody. I'm hosting this show, and it probably sounds pretty different right now because I'm doing it from my car. I have a hands-free microphone. I've got a digital recorder. I do this from time to time, like if I'm going on a longer drive for whatever. And this week I had to go to a like conference thing in Denver, so I have like a 90-minute drive each way. So I figured, you know, I try to make good use of my time. You know what I mean? And one of the ways I can make good use of my time is by doing this. But I gotta say, like, I recommend it. Try it sometime. Like, if you're ever going on a long drive and you just hate it, like, talk into your fucking AirPods or whatever. Record a podcast. It does make the time go by fast. I don't know why. It just seems to. So anyway, I thought maybe, you know, I'm like, well, probably every couple years, I figure I must have, like, one new listener. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe I don't. I don't want to sound cocky in saying that I probably have, like, a new listener every year or so, but seems likely. It seems possible. How about I'll say that? I don't want to say it seems likely. I'll say it seems possible that I have a new listener. So, you know, I wanted to do a little self-interview, a little interview jerking off here. And, like, I've done a couple things like this before because, you know, if you go online, you'll find a lot of things where people are like, what do I talk about on a podcast? Or, like, what are good things to podcast topics? Which I always find very funny because I'm like, I don't quite understand the person who's like, I want to do a podcast, but I have nothing to talk about. And it's like, well, why, what? Wait, what? I mean, sure, figure it out as you go, but I don't know. Maybe, like, think of what you might want to talk about first. That seems like the first step in developing a podcast. But anyway, I found some interview questions that are supposed to be, like, more unusual and, like, more helpful when interviewing somebody. The idea behind the ones I found was, you know, the person who put them up was like, yeah, I mean, if you ask people the same questions all the time, you know, you're going to get their stock answers, which is very true. Like, if you ask a writer at a Q&A, if you're like, who are your influences? You know, they'll have that locked and loaded. And they kind of can almost go into autopilot because they're like, I know what I'm going to say. And I know who I'm going to say, or, you know, they'll just say, like, you know, well, these are a couple of my main influences. Here's a couple of good books I've read lately. And then, you know, but ultimately you're like, is that really a great question? No. So these are supposed to be better, so let's give it a try. So first question is, what did your parents do for a living? Well, my mom was a speech therapist in the school system. She got a master's degree in speech and language pathology, I think is what it was called. But, and I have this very distinct memory because she got her master's degree and her mom moved to town to take care of me and my brother because she was working and going to school and, you know, taking care of two boys most of the time. My parents were split up. So, you know, she had a lot going on. And so she was in her cap and gown and stuff, and we were taking pictures in her backyard. And me and my brother kept making faces, you know, like, because we were, like, 9, and that's kind of what you did when you're 9. Especially back then, because it was a film camera. So there was something very hilarious to kids about, like, oh, I gave you bunny ears, or, like, oh, I made a face. But no one's going to know you made the face until, you know, the film comes back, except of course the person taking the picture knows. And me and my brother did this so many times, and my grandma's trying to take this fucking picture and would be like, stop making faces. And then, you know, be like, Ian, you stop making faces. And then Peter, you stop making faces. And we did it so many times and wasted so many pictures that my mom got really upset and left, you know, the picture taking venue and was crying. She like went inside and was crying. And my grandma was rightfully pissed off at us. And I think that like we didn't understand. Well, I know we didn't understand that like this was a big deal for my mom. You know what I mean? Because you don't know, when you're like in first grade or something, you're like, I don't know, what's graduate school? You're like, it's fucking, well, I finished kindergarten. You don't see me making a big deal. You know what I mean? And you don't really know what a big deal it is. And I think for my mom, it was probably hard because we, not because we didn't know it was a big deal, but because I think it probably felt kind of isolating. I don't think she really had anyone to celebrate this with, you know what I mean? And like to relate to and about it and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure most of the other people in her program were like younger and didn't have kids and stuff. And it sucked. It's a horrible memory. You know, like how you have those memories in your life that you beat yourself up over, even though you're like, I really don't need to. Like, I'm guessing my mom remembers that. But I'm guessing that she's not still upset about it. You know what I mean? Or like at this point in her life, she's like, I understand what was going on. I think the thing is my guess as an adult now is I'm like, I think there was more to it than just like we kept fucking up these pictures. I think it was a little bit like, I don't know, these damn kids dragging me down and they can't even keep it together to take one fucking picture for my goddamn master's graduation. Like, come on, guys. This is when it would be really good to have another parent, right? I mean, my grandma gave us some shit and was totally right about it. And I think we eventually did take a picture that worked. I'm not sure. But, you know, the picture is always tainted by the knowledge of, like, what it took to get there. Anyway, after many years working in the school district, she went to working in nursing homes and then at-home healthcare, which is a fucking nightmare, by the way. Not because the patients are horrible. She actually met a lot of really interesting people and nice people and good people. It was more like the system is horrible. I mean, I don't want to go off on a whole like thing about the healthcare system in the United States. I just want to say that it's horrible. Anybody who thinks that the healthcare system is really great here and is like shit in places where you don't have to pay for things is like a fool. Because it's like, well, the insurance companies are never on your side, you know, as the patient. Or if you're the doctor who's requesting something that would cost the insurance company money, they're like never team you. They're always like, how can we save some money? You know what I mean? But anyway, and that was a lot of her frustration. A lot of her bosses and stuff were people who, they came from the business world. And so they were like, well, here's how we can shave off this and charge more for that and so on. And like, here's what's billable hours. And they really took advantage of people like my mom too, who just wanted to do a good job and did genuinely care. And I, you know, went quite a bit above and beyond for their patients. Like doing that wasn't, I think like the way I would summarize it is the way it's set up here is that my mom had to choose between, you know, being really successful in her job and doing the right thing for people. And those two things are at odds a lot of times in that realm, and that sucks. But she recently retired, and I'm so glad that she did. And now she's, like, going crazy doing everything, which is great. she's, you know, got all these hobbies and she's doing all this stuff. And she's like, oh, I signed up for this thing and I took this class and whatever. And I'm like, all right, you know. And she's like, I had friends over and I made dinner for them. And she does that like once a month or something. And she's like, yeah, they always want to bring stuff, but I don't want them to bring food or anything. So I just tell them to bring flowers. And they all bring flowers, and then my mom cooks, and they eat it. And I'm like, this is amazing. It's like my mom has this whole new social life that I don't even know about. My dad was an anesthesiologist until I was about 14, at which point he got arrested and eventually was in and out of jail for the next probably 15 to 20 years. The basic charge was like felony threatening of a judge or something like that, but it's a very long, complicated story that goes way beyond what he did for a living. I think the thing is like, he was a smart guy. I think he was a capable doctor, most likely, but he made horrible choices. You know what I mean? If I was a more romantic person, I would be like, oh, yeah, he got married a lot because he was looking for love. And I'm like, I don't know if he was always looking for love. I think he was looking for what he thought love was, but seemed to be, from an adult lens, unfortunately, more like horniness, which is really gross, but there you go. So anyway, he did that, and then he was in a prison. And then I gather that after he got out, he's living in some kind of a structured living environment. It's kind of, from what I gathered, it's like a retirement home for people who are like maybe a little mentally ill or like being reintroduced into society. But, you know, it's like people, you know, he's like in his 70s. He's never going to be able to work because he's got, you know, mental illness and stuff. So it's like, well, what do you do with that guy? And it's like, I mean, I guess he could be homeless, which he was for a while in between jail stints. But so I guess it's better than that, right? Okay, the next question is, what are you very good at? Man, this is hard for me. Like, I don't really like to toot my own horn. But I will threat it. Do you get it? That's one of my great twoist jokes that I'm good at inventing. I guess writing is probably something I would say I'm good at because I've had people tell me I'm good at it. You know, I've been lucky enough to have opportunities for people to like read things I've written and tell me I'm good at it. And this is like coworkers or strangers who've read the books that I sell online, which you can find. Go to HelpfulSnowman.com and click on the books tab. It'll take you to my Amazon page. Okay. Well, no, I think it, whatever. Who fucking cares? You're not going to do it. So what difference does it make? Nothing matters. I think that writing is probably the thing that I'm the best at. You know what I mean? Like, if there's one skill, if I had to go on one skill for the rest of my life, it's probably that. If I had to rely on something for the rest of my life, if they were like, well, you got to get a new job based on a skill, I'd be like, that seems like my best chance. In some ways, I do have concerns about it because I'm like, with AI, you know, ChatGPT generates some pretty good text. Like, you could easily have ChatGPT write an entire newsletter for your library, let's say. Let's say your job was to write a newsletter. You could easily have ChatGPT do it. And it wouldn't be bad. But I don't think it would be that good. But I actually kind of have a theory on where this is all headed. Because, you know, a lot of people have said, like, oh, it's going to put a lot of content creators out of work. And I'm like, it will. For, like, crap companies, like, you know, UC Health is like a hospital healthcare provider in my area, right? And they send out a newsletter, and it's basically just like, oh, here's what you can do to help avoid the flu this year or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, ChatGPT can write that stuff. That's not a problem. And I do think that I don't really have a problem with someone using ChatGPT to do that as like an assistive tool, right? Or especially like, I think if someone's writing a cover letter for a job, I'm like, yeah, I have no fucking problem with ChatGPT doing that. And then like the person can go in and tweak it. Because I'm like, who wants to write a cover letter? Who cares? However, I think the future of like content creation, like let's go back to that library newsletter as an example. I think the future of it is hyper-specific and very personal. So in other words, like if I tell a personal story, it's not that ChatGPT can't do that, right? It could make a facsimile of a personal story, but the problem is, if you're a big company and you start writing these like very personal sounding stories, and then someone finds out that you've been using ChatGPT, so it's like, okay, so wait a minute. That very personal story, I wrote like a story about, you know, a library that I worked at for 15 years turned 20 years old, like last year. So I wrote like a very personal like recollection of my time there and some of the things there and some of the people there and all that stuff. And I think the thing is ChatGPT could do it, but when and if people found out that you use ChatGPT to do that, I think they're going to be really upset. And I think they are not going to trust you in the future. To, you know, if they read a thing, they're going to be like, well, did this really happen? Or is this just another bullshit story? Right? And so I think that's where the future is for people like me who want to write. Is because it's like, look, I can write personal things. I can write things that I think are touching. And I think people don't want to be touched by ChatGPT. I think they want to... part of the whole process of reading something personal is knowing that there's someone on the other end who has those feelings. You know what I mean? And so if you remove that from the equation, you lose something, but not just from my perspective because I lose a paycheck. I think you lose something in terms of trust from your audience or like belief in what you're saying. Because it's like, yeah. Yeah, so, and it's not even just a matter of, like, fiction versus nonfiction. I think it's, I think people, when they read things like that, will want to connect with somebody else on the other end. Even if they don't know that, even if they wouldn't put it that way, I think that's how people are going to feel in the near future. As opposed to, like, just reading generic informational content with no... spin. I guess the other thing is I do think that I think in my writing I'm pretty creative and I'll take a weird angle on something that I don't think ChatGPT would take in general. So, you know, it's a real plus minus because I think I'm really good at something, but I'm good at something that maybe won't be in demand much anymore. We'll have to see. The next is, what's your favorite book and why? And I think my favorite book is In the City of Shy Hunters by Tom Spanbauer. And the reason is I think he's like the most, I think he's the best writer I've ever read. And he was my teacher for a while. And, you know, he said something a lot in his teaching, which was like, when he was learning in his MFA classes, he was trying to remember how to say this, but, you know, when he was learning to write poetry as part of his MFA, it was like every word mattered and every line mattered, and even if it didn't advance the plot, it was important to construct it in a way that was, like, pleasing and poetic, I guess, for lack of a better word. I'm no Tom Spanbauer, so... and his philosophy was like, why can't you write fiction that same way? And, you know, he said like a lot of fiction is written where it's basically every every word or every sentence is holding up a little sign that says, just ignore me, the plot is that way. Keep reading, keep going to the right. The plot's that way. Don't get hung up on looking at me. You know, I'm just basically, I'm a road on which the plot travels. And it's just like, just roll your tires over me and keep moving. And it's sort of like, yeah, that I think that's a very popular style of writing, which is a style that doesn't force you to think about the sentences or the words at all. And instead, you know, it's like the fact that it's words on paper is inconvenient. And so it's as much as you can overcome that inconvenience is the style. His style is very opposite of that. And like, but in a good way, like when I say his books are dense, it's because the sentences and the way things sound is really amazing. But also, it's not hard to read. It's not like you don't understand what's going on. It's not like it's not like reading Ulysses or something where you're like, what the fuck is happening? Or Dubliners or something maybe not by James Joyce where you're just like, I don't understand any of what's happening right now. You know what I mean? Like, I understand these words and I think I understand these sentences, but I don't know what's going on. And, you know, his books have a story to them. They're not just like plotless screw arounds. They have something going on and it builds to something. And I think In the City of Shy Hunters does that the best. And it's probably his masterpiece. But if I was recommending a book for someone who hadn't read that or, you know, doesn't read that way very much, I would recommend I Loved You More instead. Because I Loved You More is really interesting because it really lays out his style of writing. It's almost like it talks about how he writes within the story itself. And it's very autobiographical. I mean, most of his books are. But I think that one is also excellent. And it's not quite as dense. It, you know, it's not hard to read at all. How did you meet your other half? I met her at work. I was a librarian and she was a shelver. She was in grad school and immediately got a job while she moved here from Missouri and immediately got a cat and got a job. Because I think she just kind of wanted to be busy, but you know, she wanted to like make her own way. She wanted to make money and do those things. So she got a job at the library shelving. And she ended up being on Thursday nights, which were my nights. So we worked together a lot. And, you know, we got to know each other. Honestly, we got to know each other very slowly over a couple of years. She was always really nice. Like, I remember working with her and thinking she was nice. She was very hardworking. And there's something about her. I think it's because she's pretty and she's smart and, you know, she dresses nice. And so I think there's something about her when you first see her that you're like, I don't know, is she like a, she kind of struck me as like maybe like a sorority girl, like maybe she would be stuck up or something. And then like you talk to her for 2 minutes and you're like, oh, she's not stuck up at all. And it's just this like thing I think I have, I don't know if everybody has this, but this preconceived notion that like good-looking people are not nice. And she's really nice. But anyway, yeah, and like just sometimes she would come and like if she was done working for the day and I was still staying later, she would come chat with me in my office or we would like chat in the parking lot after work and stuff. And eventually it turned into a romance. Which was great. And also, pretty shortly after we started dating, she no longer worked at the library anymore, which was also great. Because, you know, it was fine. Like, it's especially the first part of dating somebody, it's fine to work at the same place, especially because I wasn't her boss in any capacity, nor was I. No, it's not like I worked with her all the time. I worked there 40 hours a week. She worked there 10 hours a week or something. So, you know, it's not like we were constantly together at work. But anyway, that's how we met. Which isn't like a super, you know, meet cute or something. Well, I guess it is. Like, if you don't work at the library, it probably seems like a romantic place to meet. But it's not. It's just, it's like meeting at an office. I think it's kind of funny because, you know, a lot of people talk about, like, not dating anyone you work with or something. And I think that rule is kind of dumb. I think it's dumb to date somebody that you supervise. That doesn't work. I think it's dumb to date somebody you work with who supervises you. I mean, it's, you know, the onus is going to be more on the supervisor to manage that, but I don't do it. I wouldn't suggest it. It's probably not going to turn out great. And when it doesn't turn out great, everyone's going to be like, what did you think was going to happen, numbnuts? I also probably wouldn't date someone who I work with, like, directly all the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, if we're like, working at adjacent cubicles on the same projects and we have to collaborate a lot and stuff, I don't know if I would work together. But I don't know that I would totally forbid it either. I mean, I think people who say that, but then, you know, a lot of people say that, and then I'm like, didn't you date someone when you were at job X or job Y? I mean, a lot of people meet that way. The thing is, you spend a lot more of your waking life at work than you do not at work. So it's like, I mean, the chances that you're going to meet somebody are pretty good at a workplace. So, I don't know. I'm kind of like, well, fuck it. Who cares? And then sometimes, too, someone's like, oh, I would never date someone who I work with. And I'm like, well, you've been married for 10 years, and I think your spouse is kind of a dud. So, like, maybe you should, I don't know, maybe you should have considered it. Let's see. Who would you like to play you in a movie? This is such a loaded question. Because it's like you're kind of forcing yourself to admit what your self-esteem level is, right? You're kind of like, do I think of myself as handsome? Do I think of myself as charming? You know what I mean? Do I think of whatever? And it's like, well, I mean, you could just say like, yeah, I don't know. I would just have Steve Buscemi play me. And everybody's like, well, I mean, he's fucking 30 years older than you. And, you know, I don't know. I don't want to talk badly about Steve Buscemi. I think I'm probably a little better looking. But you know, I can't say, well, I don't know, Ryan Reynolds? That seems like a good choice, because it's like, eh, is that a good choice? I don't know. So I think what I would want is to have someone play me who I think is, maybe doesn't look like me, but captures my essence somehow. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I felt like Larry David was the closest person to who I feel like as a person, I'd be like, let's do Larry David. Because honestly, I think that could work. And I would like that. I would like it's like a stunt cast, but also not. Because it's like, well, I mean, he's nowhere near my age. He's not really like me physically or in mannerisms, but I, you know, this person captures my essence really well. I just don't know who that would be, you know what I mean? I don't really follow any actors that I know very well. I would prefer, honestly, if we can get into the vanity part, I would prefer an actor who is not as good looking as I am, who's uglier than I am. So that's gonna be kind of a tough pull, because I don't know how many people have gotten very famous being uglier than me, but I'm sure there are people, and or at least they don't have to be like hideous chuds. I would just like them to be somebody who, when they met me in real life, it would be feasible that someone would say, oh, you're better looking than the person who was you in the movie. You know what I mean? So that would be a big plus. So, you know, with those things in mind, I don't actually want to name a name because I feel like that's cruel, right? But, I don't know, probably just some unknown actor at this point is really what we're getting at to here. All right. What does your morning routine look like? I think this morning routine thing is very funny. That, like, so many people, it's like a big thing, right? Like, a lot of people ask about or a lot of people talk about, and it's like the morning routines of, you know, Einstein and Steve Jobs and whatever. I always think that talk about morning routines in particular is very funny because I'm like, why are people under the illusion that if they behave for the first hour of the day the way that Steve Jobs did, that they will be the CEO of a company? You know what I mean? I do like one, well, kind of one thing, a version. I heard, I think it was Einstein, was like, basically wore the same thing every day, so then he didn't have to think about what he was going to wear every day. And, you know, his thing was like, I don't want to be distracted by thinking of picking out clothes. And I'm like, yeah, I guess if you're, like, revolutionizing physics, yeah, your brain's, you know, you got some tabs open. Not that Einstein would know what that meant because, you know, that's not really lingo from his time, but you do have tabs open. For me, it's like I just like to, I don't like to think about most of what I wear in terms of, like, I don't want to pick out socks. And I don't want to launder socks and then match them back up. So I have one kind of sock. And then I have like two other pairs of socks that are like longer black dress socks. Because you do need those occasionally. And then literally all the socks that I wear and own are the same sock. And then you just put them all in the drawer and then you take out two. When you do your laundry, you just put them all in the same part of the drawer and you're done. I'm not saying this has, like, revolutionized my life or changed, you know, me for the better as a person or given me an edge in terms of astrophysics discoveries. I'm just saying, you know, I didn't like doing laundry. I still don't like doing laundry. This has made doing laundry slightly easier, very marginally easier. And I am a big fan of, like, hey, if there's, like, a chore you don't like and there's a way to make it a little easier, do that. You know what I mean? Plus, it's like, it becomes very easy to tell when it's like time to get some new socks. Because you're like, you know, all my socks are kind of getting worn out because that's the way it works. And so then you just buy like 4 12 packs of socks and then you're good to go for like another couple of years. Boom. So what is it? Yeah. I mean, I could share my morning routine. I just don't think it's significant. And I don't think anyone would want to replicate my morning routine because, like, in order to achieve my particular level of success, I think copying my morning routine is, like, you could probably just keep doing whatever you're doing and then replicate that success. So here's basically, I wake up. I usually feel like shit when I wake up. I brush my teeth. I get dressed, usually in that order, because I often stain a shirt with toothpaste if I don't do it in that order. It kind of blows in the winter because I'll be fucking freezing, but it does motivate me to, like, keep moving. And it's like when I get up in the morning, I feel foggy and shitty and I'm just unhappy. And I have to just kind of remind myself to, like, keep moving. Like, if I sit down on the bed to put my socks on, I might just be like, and then sit there for a minute. And then I'm like, no, keep going. Keep going. I always eat breakfast. I think it's good to eat breakfast. I know a lot of people are like, I don't feel hungry in the morning. But I'm kind of like, yeah, if you just start eating breakfast in the morning, you will be hungry in the morning, and I think it's better for you. It's better for me. I don't know. And basically, I get up, I eat breakfast, I drink coffee. I drink one cup of coffee in the morning, which is a drastic reduction for me from a couple years ago when I was drinking an entire French press myself every morning. So that's probably like approaching 40 ounces of coffee. And then, you know, maybe I would have another in the afternoon. You know, I would have maybe a third at another, you know what I mean? It was just kind of constant all day. And the rule I tried to not break was mostly to not have it after 4 in the afternoon, which is way too late.
If you're having coffee at 4 in the afternoon,
you're going down a troublesome path. Some people can process it fine and I guess sleep fine, but I don't know. That's just something for me that, whatever, been a positive change in my morning routine. A lot of mornings I work from home, so on those mornings I don't really get dressed. I mean, I wear clothes, but not clothes that I would go out in. And I just start working. I'll usually eat my breakfast while working if I'm work from home, and eat my breakfast before leaving if I'm work at work, which is like, you know, hey, bosses out there, I work through breakfast when I'm at home and not when I'm going to work. If I'm going to work, I usually like sort of linger around the kitchen as long as possible to sort of deny going to work and then go to work. Eventually decide, like, let's just get this over with. I have about a 5-minute commute to work. I was walking to work for a while, but it's just like the walk I would take to work is really unpleasant. And then what ended up happening is last year I often had to drive to a new location we were building downtown. So if I had walked to work, it made things very inconvenient for me. So I mostly drive now. I also mostly drive, especially post-COVID, I've taken up driving a lot again because I eat lunch in my car. You know, we're getting out of my morning routine, but I usually eat lunch in my car, and so it's like, well, you gotta have your car there. I gotta drive my lunchroom to work. Anyway, I don't think I have a special morning routine. Like, maybe I would be better off if I did, you know, some, like, the artist's way and did morning pages or something, or if I did some kind of meditation in the morning, or was like, the first thing I do is turn off my telephone and not look at it until 11 a.m. You know what I mean? It would probably be better for me to do that kind of stuff, but I hate the morning a lot. Now, on the weekend, which is like more what my routine would be like, you know, in a natural state, I wake up really early because if I wake up early during the week, I can't sleep in on the weekend anymore. It's just like a problem with my body or something. I think it's just getting older. Just can't sleep in, which is funny because you're like, when you're young, you're like, how come old people are always up at like 5 a.m. or like retired guys, they're like having coffee at Wendy's at 5 a.m. And you're like, but then you get to be older and you're like, oh, because you just fucking wake up then all the time. You just do. Like, I don't know. You're just awake, so you might as well do stuff. And so I wake up before Poon Master Flex because she still has the ability to sleep in. She's much better at sleeping than I am. When I did a sleep study recently, you know, they're like, how long does it take you to get to sleep? And I'm like, I don't know, 30 minutes or something. And I asked her, I was like, how long does it take you to fall asleep? And she's like, 30 seconds? And I was like, oh my God, what the fuck? So she'll be sleeping and I usually read comic books in the bed until she's ready to wake up, which can be like 2 hours sometimes, which is fine. I don't have a problem with it. You shouldn't either. What makes you feel inspired or motivated? Man. I don't know. That's a tough one. inspired or motivated. I don't think very much makes me feel inspired or motivated. It's like, I remember talking about, you know, I remember earlier in this episode talking about my favorite book, Tom Spanbauer book. And it, honestly, like when I read his books, I feel a little demotivated because I'm like, this is so fucking amazing and I could never do this. Given a million years, given nothing but time, I couldn't make this book. You know what I mean? I couldn't, or its equivalent. Like, I can't live up to it. So in some ways, I find, like, really great books to be demotivating because I think they're so good that you just feel like, there's no way. This is, like, superhuman what this person has done. Okay, you know what does sort of motivate me, though, on, I guess, that opposite end? Sometimes I read a book that I find very mediocre. And, you know, it might be a book that gets a lot of praise in the literary world or from critics or whatever. And when I read those kinds of books, I do often feel a little bit motivated to write and stuff because when I read a book that I find mediocre and I'm like, it was okay, I do feel like I could do better than that. Like, I know I'm not great, but I think I'm better than that. So I guess the failures of others are motivating to me. But, you know, I... which is, like, sounds so horrible. Sounds so cynical. But it's true. I think it's a... You know, I heard Kevin Smith talk before about this. And he's, like... he's a filmmaker who I think rightly... has been, you know, has said about himself, but others have said about him, that like a lot of people who watched Kevin Smith movies made movies, right? And he's like, he says it's a factor of people watch his movies and they're like, wait, this counts? This is a movie? Like, okay, I can do that. So that's the feeling I have sometimes when I read a book or an article, is I'm like, this counts? Like, this is a real... Somebody wrote this and, like, got it, and it's in, you know, the New York Times. I'm like, well, I could do that. I could at least do that. So that's... I find that pretty motivating, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's like a self-esteem boost, you know what I mean? Let's see. What keeps you up at night? I don't know if I should answer this literally or less literally. I mean, like, what do I worry about versus what keeps me up at night? Everything keeps me up at night because I have problems. You know, I think about a lot of things. I mean, everything from very mundane, like... Last night I'm going to bed, right? And I'm thinking about how I'm going to this thing today. And I'm like, okay, here's what I got to bring with me. And like, got to pack this, got to pack that. And then I'm like, okay, I got to put some podcasts on my MP3 player for the walk. You know, I got to do this. And I just kind of like make that list in my head. And then I'm like, oh, fuck, I got to remember this. I got to remember that. And I'm not very good at, like, making the list in my head and then being like, okay, I'm done. And I try to, like, pack the night before so that I'm like, I don't have to think about it. But I never successfully do that. So lots of little things like that keep me up at night because I'm, like, thinking about what do I need to do tomorrow? What do I need to have ready? What are my plans? Like, what's something I need to, you know... Oh my God, I need to text my friend because we're going to do something for her birthday, but I don't know what, and she needs to let us know which thing she picked. And I've been meaning to do that for like 4 days, and it's like, when do I remember? Oh yeah, like 10 p.m. every night. If I had to talk about like what do I worry about the most at night... I think I worry about mine and Poon Master Flex's health the most. She had a pretty big health scare in 2020, and that has not left me. since then, you know, and I think about it a lot. Like, I think about one of us being very sick or dying a lot. So that keeps me up at night to an extent, you know, and I think about things like, man, maybe we should exercise together more. Maybe we should eat healthier together more or something. And I'm like, you know, I just want to live together forever. In a more, yet another sense, I think a lot about how car-centric my city is and how much I hate that. Tell me some, let's see, I want to end on something that's not quite so, such a downer. Have you had your I made it moment yet? Do you feel like you've made it and had that moment? I guess the only way I know how to answer that is, like, I sure as hell hope not. I hope that I don't look back on this time and am like, that's the moment when I made it. Because if this is making it, oh boy. I mean, like, what are the depths that I'm headed for? You know what I mean? Like, if this is the pinnacle, or it's like I've crossed some kind of line, that would be a little difficult to deal with emotionally, I think. Because that's not great, right? I don't like to complain. Well, I do. I love to complain. That's like why I did this. But yeah, it's a little... I wouldn't say that I've had major successes in my life that made me feel like, by God, I've made... You know what I mean? It's not like... Oh, it was when I was in the writer's room of this TV show, or like, oh, when I saw, I'm sure for a lot of writers, it's like, I saw my book in print on the shelf at Barnes & Noble, or in an airport, or whatever, my favorite bookstore, and I was like, that's when I knew I made it. Which is a very valid version of your I made it moment. And I don't have that experience, you know what I mean? So, I haven't made it yet. I don't think I've had that moment yet, but maybe I will. I don't know if you ever really make it, you know what I mean? Or some of us probably never make it, and that's just, you know, maybe some of our lives are about accepting the fact that we never made it. We never turned out to be what we thought we were, or like things didn't go the way we thought they were going to go or hoped they were going to go. Do you like how I was like, I want to end this on a not such a downer, and then I'm like, maybe life is about accepting that life doesn't turn out great most of the time. All right, I've been Pete. But really, I've been Pete, and yeah, my life hasn't turned out totally how I thought it would, but you know, it's good. I'm fine. I'm fine, everybody. Isn't that a great way to end a podcast, like insisting that you're fine? I'm not emotionally, you know, destroyed. Despite what you've just heard, I have structure to my emotions still. I'm fine.
You're not gonna say
fine.
Somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony? Dee, 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 you're half a snowman.